Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
Word!
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com for comprehensive show notes, infographics, fast and furious wallpaper, or to just leave comments. Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project. And here's Brett.
What?
Oh.
Okay, I guess this will work. Yeah. Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is May 26th. So, very pleased to welcome Kevin Geary back to the show. This is his third appearance on School Sucks in the last year. Kevin's site, rebootedbody.com. For those of you who might not have heard, he was on the show at the end of March. At that time, I expressed to him some concerns about my state of health and fitness. He gave some suggestions. I implemented them, and he's back for a little progress report. Osborne joins in to share some of his own health and fitness concerns. All that's covered in the show. Grab a capture device. There's lots of valuable information in this one. Hey, folks, before we get started today, I wanted to share an email that I received just last night. I'm sorry, I just can't get this off my mind. It's from a listener named Roger. Brett, I signed up several months ago, paid you some money, but have no idea how to access my account. Never heard how from you. Roger is referencing something called the AV Club. So what I do is I ask people for $6 a month to support the show if they listen on a regular basis, if they find the show valuable, and in exchange, they get a bunch of additional content. I'm actually working hard right now on producing new bonus content. Oh, and when everybody signs up, they get an automated email with instructions on how to access that content. If you sign up, check that junk folder. Sometimes it might go there. Roger continues. I'm thinking I'll unsign or deregister now. Keep the shekels already sent, but stop getting more. Recent stuff has been sort of wimpy. I like the hard-hitting trivium stuff, but once I heard you or one of your guests use the word Nazi, as if that's something real, just like in a Spielberg movie, I knew that grammar wasn't in play. Just pre-programming from the cult, Marxist types. Way too much of that. And then, a while back, you guys got all touchy-feely with that NDC stuff. Come on, that's not for men. It's for dorks. Please unsubscribe me and no longer get shekels from my bank. Roger. Roger, thanks for your feedback. At first, I thought this was a prank. I checked the records. This is actually somebody who is contributing to the show. So I'm always sorry to see people go. And that's one of the facts of life. So always needing to be bringing new people in. If you've been listening, if you've been enjoying the show, please consider supporting us. You go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV. We ask for six. And I know a lot of people don't have time to jump into a bunch of additional content. But like I've said before, go on a treasure hunt once in a while. There's some really interesting stuff there that is really divergent from our regular content. And it is essential for the health and the future of this project. And all kidding aside, you know, I really appreciate Roger and whatever motivation he originally had for supporting School Sucks. But I gotta tell you, I'm happy to trade him for somebody who sees value in connected communication and also believes that Nazis were real. So if that sounds like a description of you, please consider joining us. We could use your help. Thank you so much. And on that note, we've got a roundtable coming up this Wednesday. It's going to be me, Richard Grove from TragedyandHope.com, and Ernie Hancock from Freedom's Phoenix. And we're going to be talking about this very issue, how to, you know, live and express and communicate the principles of liberty without having to eat the government cheese. So if you have any thoughts on that, you can certainly post them in our Facebook group. I'll probably start a thread. And I really hope you get something out of today's presentation. I sure did. Here we go. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Very good. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. And I'm also joined by Osborne in the studio. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, gentlemen.
My pleasure. And Carlos is here, just listening in. Hey, Carlos, you can only wave. I mean, that's all we can do. All right. So, Kevin, just in case people didn't hear the last show, we had originally planned after recording, I think, in the last week in March to reconvene at the end of April to check on my progress after you gave me a handful of really helpful suggestions. I did get an extra 3 or 4 weeks to work on that, and the progress has been great. So I'm very grateful. The suggestions were that I should maybe reevaluate the intermittent fasting that I was doing. I should add breakfast to the routine. You had this radical suggestion that I should cut out this chemical ice cream filled with weird gums. Actually, I'm really proud. I have not eaten that ice cream one time since the last time we talked.
Excellent. Is it still in your freezer? You still have it?
Nope.
It's, you got rid of it?
Well, I moved since then, so it didn't survive the move. Yeah, I think I've only eaten even coconut milk ice cream once since then. I have this, I actually learned this from a friend. You can take cashews if you're in a real bind for a delicious frozen treat. Add some coconut milk, almond milk, blend it up in a magic bullet or something. You just need one serving of cashews, which is about a quarter cup. Add a sweetener of your choice. You can blend up some dark chocolate or some fruit in there if you want. I usually throw in an egg. I usually throw in some protein powder. You just got to go back to the freezer and stir it every hour so it doesn't turn into a rock. And after 4 or 5 hours, you have an amazing, amazing treat.
Good stuff.
Some other changes, stress way down. I talked about these anxious episodes that I had been having more regularly while doing the low-carb diet over the period of the last few years. Haven't had one to speak of since first or second week in April. Body fat way down, pretty toned. I'm guessing it's closer to 10. I'm not sure. It's a hard thing to estimate by looking. Strength up, energy up, enjoying breakfast every day, eating basically every day what you told me to eat, which was a couple eggs, a couple pieces of bacon, half an avocado. That's been sufficient. That gets me into the early afternoon. I still do the bulletproof coffee, but not as a meal replacement. Mm-hmm. Down to one cup a day using grass-fed butter and coconut oil and regular coffee. I have increased carbs, increased calories. Most of the carbs are coming in the form of fruit or red or sweet potatoes.
Good.
And I can't figure out where else to get carbs.
Rice.
Rice. What about beans? I'm a real fan of garbanzo beans.
You can do beans if you you just have to, you know, prepare them, like soak them and just prepare them like traditionally. I wouldn't just open a can of beans and have at it.
Right, right. Yeah, I've heard that about soaking them. Osborne joins us today. He's going to bring up some of his own challenges. The two areas where I still struggle, sleep. Listener submitted question, and I'm glad it was submitted. Osborne has some thoughts on that as well. The other one for me is endurance. I have incorporated more movement into my day, and you know, I've really been trying to be more conscious of what I'm doing with my time. This is something that I've been working on pretty intensely for the last 6 weeks, and you know, being more conscious obviously helps us align, as you mentioned in a recent post on your site, aligning behavior with intentions, right? So being more conscious allows us to stop and look at how we're behaving and make a change if necessary. So am I moving enough? Probably not, but it's more than I was the last time we talked. That's where I'm at. So I'm pretty happy right now as the summer approaches.
Yeah, that's fantastic progress.
Osborne, what would you want to say to introduce, you know, your situation to Kevin?
Okay, so I've been on about a 3-year journey of trying to improve health. Before that, very much a Taco Bell and cheeseburger eater, very sedentary. My wife has been paleo for probably 12 years, so I finally jumped on the bandwagon with her and the kids. Dropped a lot of fat right away. I'm sure you've heard this story 10 million times, right? About 2 months, dropped 50-60 pounds, and then that was the end of it. Quit smoking at that same time. Still had a Diet Coke addiction that I only recently was able to give up. Started exercising about 2 years ago, 3 days in the gym, lifting, plus about an hour or two of walking.
And is that an hour or two of walking on those 3 days, or is that?
No, on every day.
Okay.
And I'm just not seeing any progress recently. I just checked my measurements last week compared to a year ago. The only change, 2 additional inches in my chest.
Okay.
So I'm feeling very much like a very faith-based with regard to my health activities.
Yeah.
You know, like it seems like I'm doing the right things, but I'm just not seeing the evidence in my own life. I'm not despondent about it. I'm not stressing out about it. But I would like to investigate ways of tweaking the dials to hopefully make some more progress.
Yeah. And so where would you say you're at in terms of progress? Like if you said you lost 50 or 60 pounds, how much would you estimate you still have to go?
Guessing probably at least that again.
Okay. Do you want to just jump into his situation, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine.
Okay. All right, so you're doing, you said you're eating paleo with the family, right?
Yeah, so I should probably clarify because that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But when I say paleo, I mean I eat meat and vegetables.
Okay.
So like I'm not eating, you know, paleo pancakes for breakfast and paleo muffins for lunch. And
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to suddenly realize you're fat because that happened to me once.
Are you eating 3 times a day?
Not all the time. So this up until this Diet Coke quitting, I was more eating a large lunch and small dinner. That was my eating schedule.
Okay.
But since I've gone through a lot of changes since the caffeine elimination, and so I'm going to bed a lot earlier and waking up a lot earlier. And about half the time when I wake up now, I'm hungry. So I'll eat a couple eggs and either some sausage or bacon in the morning.
Okay. So you're eating 3 times a day now, mostly?
About half the time.
Okay. And as far as like portions go, are you eating normal portions? Do you feel like you're eating a lot of food, or do you feel like you're eating a little bit of food?
Probably in the middle. So I've on 2 occasions, did about 3 or 4 weeks of actually measuring what I was eating. I was surprised to discover that I was eating a lot less than I thought I was, which is a story I'm sure you've heard many times. That's why I was checking. Are you familiar with Jason Seib and Sarah Fragoso? So I listened to a lot of them. That was a topic they were hitting on.
What's their show?
They call it Jossa Fit now.
Okay.
So there are people who have thrown away the paleo label just kind of for the reasons we were just talking about, because it's kind of come to mean a lot of really bad things.
Oh, sure. And similar to what, Kevin and I talked about before. Gotcha.
So anyway, so I checked into that. You know, sure enough, I was eating a lot fewer calories than I thought I was. So I tried increasing that mostly through fat. So a scoop coconut oil or Kerrygold butter on things to increase the number of calories I was taking in. Did that for about 6 weeks. Didn't really notice that it was doing a whole lot for me. So it's kind of a pain in the butt to always be looking for to fat to put on things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you feel in general? Like, how are your energy levels? How is your thinking? All that stuff.
I don't feel like I feel any different than I ever have.
Yeah. Any digestive distress, any other nagging ailments, joint pain, anything like that?
So I used to deal with a lot of acid reflux back in my not healthy eating days, and that basically went away when I stopped eating the junk food.
Okay. So you got one plus there.
Yeah. Now, okay. So one health issue I do have is gout.
Okay.
Which I've dealt with that since probably 22 years old. And okay. I take allopurinol every day for that.
And do you do any, you mentioned vegetables, and how many vegetables are you eating? Like, are you doing like half meat and fat and half vegetables? Is that kind of a meal?
Yeah, probably not. Maybe not so much on the vegetables.
It makes me want to ask a question right here to Osborne that might be useful. Could meat lunch be a wild card in this discussion? How many times a week do you typically do a meat lunch?
2 on average.
There's this Brazilian steakhouse here, Kevin.
Yeah.
They will give you as much meat as you want in a sitting. The reason why I ask is, like, I used to go more often to this too, and the meals are light on vegetables typically. Like, they have like a little salad bar, but there's not much more to it as far as vegetable nourishment beyond romaine lettuce, and the rest of it is like cheese and different kinds of potato salads and dressings and stuff right. like that.
I'll throw a pile of cucumbers and peppers on a plate when I go there.
Sure, sure. But it's a hell of a lot of meat. And, you know, one of the things that I was, one of the mysteries I was really trying to unravel was protein intake, especially like me, like Osborne, we're physically active, we're lifting heavy weights multiple times a week. So it's been a little bit hard to gauge just the ratio of fat to protein.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to ask that.
Yeah. So, this is kind of, obviously, yeah, you said that I've probably heard the story a million times and I have, what we have to do is kind of break out of the paradigm of it's just about food and it's just about movement. It's not just about food and it's not just about movement. It's about a myriad of things, right? So I wrote an article called The Six Pillars of Authentic Human Health. So the first one is eat real food, obviously. Like, that's going to take care of a lot of the things that we're talking about. Of course, we have to make sure we're getting a good variety of food as well. So one thing people tend to do when they first start out on this, because the learning curve at the very beginning is kind of steep. So what they'll do is they'll find a lot of meals that they're comfortable with and just rotate those over and over and over and over again. And they won't get a lot of variety in the diet. So you need a diversity of micronutrients. Those are like the small vitamins, minerals, things like that. Not macronutrients, micronutrients. You need a good variety of those in your diet. And over time, if you just rotate the same meals and you're not getting that variety of micronutrients, you can become nutritionally poor. I call the state of being nutritional poverty, and it can actually become a trigger for many other things. And it can be a trigger for cravings, for overeating, for binging, for feeling like crap all the time, just lots of issues with that. So the first thing I would recommend is starting to get more diversity into your diet as far as nutrients are concerned, varying the types of plants that you're eating, varying the types of meat that you're eating. I wouldn't focus too much on adding a bunch of fat into the diet. I would just focus more on getting variety. So just as much, and you have to be careful with this, because if you walk into a grocery store, you know, a lot of the vegetables are in the same species. A lot of our food supply has been domesticated. So there is a very limited supply of food available to you. So people can go in and get three different vegetables thinking they're getting good variety. And really, those three are all from the same species of plant. And it's not really that much variety. So getting true variety should be, I guess, your number one goal. So okay. That would be on the food front. So, Then pillar number two is to nurture your gut. So we have to really be concerned with gut health. And if you have any form, you said you had gout, which is like a form of arthritis, right? It very good sign that there could be something going on with the gut, and therefore you're experiencing this inflammation in the rest of your body. So getting gut on board is a really important step, because, you know, you said that you lost 50 to 60 pounds and then boom, it stopped, right? A lot of factors can make weight loss completely stop, and you can run a calorie deficit and nothing happens. So gut is one of those things. Sleep is another one of those things. So there are some triggers that can completely end weight loss, even though you seem to be doing everything else right. So I would take a look at gut health as well. Pillar number three is to align your hormones. And this is going to be important. There's a lot of factors in that. Pillar number four is to master your inner psychology. It doesn't seem like you're dealing with any overeating triggers or sugar addiction or anything like that that's throwing you off track. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. So you feel like it's fairly easy for you to just stay consistent. It's other issues that you're running into.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then pillar number five would be to move your body. And we can take a look at how you're doing that and perhaps optimize that more, which is a huge piece of the puzzle. I mean, if you're not moving your body in the right ways or enough, obviously you're not going to get the results that you're after. And then you have to start also looking at pillar number six is respect that you're a unique whole person. And the problem with frameworks like paleo is that they don't really teach you about yourself. They teach you principles, but as far as real food goes, for example, you can be intolerant to many real foods, and those foods can cause inflammation in your body. They can disrupt your gut health. They can do a myriad of things that will prevent you from reaching your goals. what I do is I try to teach people to identify those foods and to get them out. Even though they're real, you can't eat all real foods because all real foods may not necessarily work for you. So figuring out what's really causing a kink in the line is going to be a great step towards getting back on track.
Absolutely.
So those are the six pillars.
All right. So let's go back to the first one and just talk about diet diversity a little bit. I mean, how do you feel, Osborne, you do with diet diversity? Because that's definitely an issue where I could improve.
And I could probably definitely improve in that regard. Particularly with our meats. And I buy whole cows and whole pigs.
Yeah.
And so those are the meats I eat. And vegetables are a little easier. My wife is a big vegetable person. She has a big garden in the backyard, and so she's always bringing different vegetables into the house. So,
yeah,
I feel pretty good there.
Okay.
I have a really narrow list of foods that I eat because they're things that are easy for me to cook. I can cook without thinking about them. So, you know, green vegetables would include kale, broccoli, salad stuff, sprouts, avocado. The meats are also very narrow, grass-fed ground beef, lamb. I did add sardines, and what a wonderful, delicious treat those have been. They're nice to add to a salad. Almonds, pumpkin seeds, macadamias, cashews, almond or some kind of nut milk, dark chocolate, a few kinds of berries, and I'm having a hard time coming up with much beyond that on my list. I'm really trying to simplify, but I think in this case I've oversimplified. I do eat salmon once in a great while. I do have some rice and potatoes, you know, now and then. So I would definitely be looking for a way to increase diet diversity.
Yeah, especially because I know you mentioned a few vegetables there, but cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts, collard greens, those are all the same species of plant.
Yeah.
So people think that those are, you know, a diverse, you know, selection. They go and put all that stuff in their cart and they've really gotten the same, you know, there is no real diversity there. So that's one way that people kind of get tricked into getting the same, you know, micronutrient range of vegetables, even though they're thinking they're getting a big variety. So, yeah.
What would be something outside of that that you would say, hey, you could eat this?
Well, one thing I tell people to do is to go to the grocery store. And of course, you want to look at the Dirty Dozen list and know what you need to buy organic and what you don't really need to buy organic. So a lot of things can be bought conventional, so you don't have to worry about it. And I would go start to pick out vegetables that you've never had before and just put them in your cart, bring them home. You got Google, you got YouTube. Like, you can find ways to prepare these very simply and just do it that way. Like, you don't have to go study plants and figure out, you know, what's in this species, what's in that species. Just start by going and picking things you've never had before. That's a great start, and start preparing those.
Okay. So this also, I think at this point, raises the question of supplementation, which we didn't really talk too much about last time. You know, taking vitamins or other supplements. I've been using, you know, that company Garden of Life?
Yes.
So I've been taking their raw meal, which is like a plant-based protein preserving a really good micronutrient profile. So I've been supplementing with that because I've always known that I've never just had the energy or the time or even the money to go out and buy every vegetable I want to have a really naturally occurring micronutrient profile in my diet. So supplementation has always been pretty important to me. Osborne, do you do any supplements?
I do not.
Okay.
I tend to agree with that just because, and really when we're talking about the lack of nutritional diversity in grocery stores, it kind of brings this supplementation thing to the forefront. There's a few, you know, leaders that I listen to who advocate going out and this is even harder, right? They advocate learning how to do wild foraging in your area where you go out and you get some edible wild plants, bring them back and prepare them. They go out on, you know, they have groups that they lead that they take out to teach people about what plants are wild and so forth. But if you look at the nutritional profile, the whole point of this is that if you look at the nutritional profile of wild plants versus domesticated plants, it's not even close. Wild plants are far more nutritious than domesticated plants. So when we're thinking back to the old days, quote unquote, it was very easy to get all of the micronutrients you needed because you were eating basically wild foods. And we're no longer doing that anymore. And that's one of the causes of why we're suffering these issues.
From there, we could talk a little bit about the second one. This one is also kind of mysterious to me. You know, I look back at the last 6 weeks. I have a lot of really positive memories about the gym. I've really enjoyed, you know, cooking and eating my own food. To be frank, I have a series of negative memories that take place in the bathroom, though. And, right. You know, without going into specifics, sometimes I feel like I'm in there too quick. Sometimes I feel like I'm in there too long. And it's just hasn't been, it's my least favorite, as far as all this stuff is concerned, it's my least favorite room in the house right now, the second being the bedroom, the bed specifically, which I did work very hard to darken today. Because there's still some light getting in. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about gut health.
All right. So yeah, the gut is extremely important. Basically, the DNA that's in the microbes in our gut far, far, far outnumbers our own DNA. So you can think of it kind of like you are a human being is basically a host for bacteria. And what we need to do to make sure that we are healthy as human beings is to make sure that the beneficial bacteria are thriving. And the pathological bacteria are being kept in check, basically. Our gut is responsible for our immune system. Our gut is responsible for the production of serotonin. If you think of your gut, it's basically like it's outside of your body. People think of it as inside their body, but it's a tube that runs from your mouth to your anus, right? And it's designed so that the things that you eat are extracted, the good stuff is allowed to breach that barrier and come into your body and be assimilated. But all of the things that aren't supposed to breach are kept outside of your body. They're kept in that tube and then they're gotten rid of at the end of the line. So what happens when you have gut issues is that things that are normally supposed to be kept outside of the body make their way into the body. And they become attacked by the immune system. They drive up inflammation. And if it gets worse enough, you can actually develop an autoimmune disease where your body starts attacking itself. So this is the cause of almost all autoimmune conditions. So the gut is basically if you were to order these, I would say that's the number one pillar. Like healing your gut is the number one thing that you need to do in order to be a healthy human being and make sure that you're functioning properly. Because if there's an issue there, everything is going to go haywire.
What would be some first steps, even as far as like research is concerned, for people who want to be doing better here?
Yeah. So the research on the gut biome is very, very young. So I know a lot of people recommend probiotics. This is it's kind of a touchy subject because I don't think that researchers are sure how to exactly manipulate the gut biome in a beneficial way. They know how to manipulate it, but there's no long-term evidence of whether that manipulation is good or bad. What we've become adapted to, you know, our gut biome versus the gut biome of somebody that existed 100,000 years ago is going to be radically different. Our gut biome in the United States is different from someone's gut biome in Japan. Our gut biome now versus a living hunter-gatherer is radically different. So saying that we can just throw some probiotics into the gut and everything's going to be fine, well, not necessarily. For a lot of people, that makes things worse, right? So there's still a lot of research that needs to be done on figuring out how exactly we're going to be manipulating this. But as far as the health of the gut goes, I mean, just starting with things that don't harm the gut would be a good idea. So that's why we're switching to real food and committing to real food. We know that processed foods are harming the gut and driving up inflammation and leading to these problems. So committing to real food is the first big step. Another big step is stress. If you have a lot of stress in your life, it's going to impact your gut health. We know that. So getting that stress under control, basically doing all of these other pillars that I mentioned, is the biggest steps toward healing the gut. Then we can talk about prebiotics, which are like food for the bacteria in your gut. If you have a healthy gut, you can keep it that way by making sure you're big on prebiotics. These would be like fermentable fibers. And this is what the gut bacteria feed on, and then they can flourish and keep that gut nice and healthy. So those are the kind of the basic steps or the basic outline for getting your gut health in check. And then paying attention to symptoms. Like if you have digestive distress, if you have systemic inflammation in the body, things like arthritis and things like anything going haywire that's very systemic, not isolated to one spot, seems to be all over, that's a pretty good sign that you may be dealing with a gut health issue.
Once there's a clean and diverse diet, maybe start playing around with things like acidophilus or kombucha.
You can definitely add in, real food probiotics would be, I guess, my first suggestion. But there's still some camps that say, no to the lacto-based probiotics. Then there's camps that are really involved in getting these soil-based organisms into your diet through supplementation. But then there's another camp that says, no, we definitely don't want soil-based organ. Like it's so, Mad Max right now with where everybody's opinions are at. So instead of taking a bunch of probiotics, I would recommend that people start with one, see what the benefit is, see if there's any change whatsoever. If it seems to be beneficial, then continue going with that. I wouldn't do a lot at once. Definitely keep the variables as minimal as possible. The first thing they do is they start drinking a bunch of kombucha, throwing down soil-based organisms, taking resistant starch, and they're hammering themselves with multiple variables, and then they don't know what's helping, what's hurting. Take a very systematic approach to this.
Yeah, and that's what I found. We talked last time about removing complication, and part of living more consciously with your body and your health and paying attention to these things is only changing small things, usually one thing for me at a time, and then trying to pay attention to see what happens. Because we do kind of get this, we get backed up, for lack of a better expression, where we need to make all these changes as soon as next Monday rolls around, and then next Monday comes, or, whatever somebody's schedule is, and we try doing a bunch of things at once, and we have no idea what kind of difference what made. So, yeah. I agree.
In the beginning, you can change a lot of variables at once, especially if they're very, simple variables like I've talked about here with the pillars. But the further you get into this, when you're really trying to dial things in, that's when you need to slow down, be very patient, and kind of go one variable at a time.
Okay, I gotcha.
And I would just say, if you have digestive distress and these other ailments that seem to be contributing to poor gut health or caused by poor gut health, that's something you really want to sort out, because people will come and say, I've stopped losing weight, or I can't get rid of this brain fog, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. I'm doing everything right. The gut has to be checked out, because those failures can be attributed directly to that.
How does one go about checking their gut health?
Yeah.
How would you even know?
Well, by the symptoms that you're experiencing, but then you can go in. I would recommend that when because the gut is so complicated, I always recommend that people get hooked up with a really good functional medicine doctor in their area. Like, don't go to a traditional MD. They're not going to really know anything about the gut. They're going to prescribe you probiotics and send you out the door, and that's about that. You need somebody who's really going to investigate what's going on with you. They're going to run tests on you and so on and so forth, and they're going to really work to isolate the issue. The problem people run into is they go to like a gastroenterologist or traditional MD, and they're not going to find any resolution there.
So you said a functional medicine doctor.
Yeah.
The third one, aligning hormones.
Yeah. So this is it's a big one. And this is really, even though it's a pillar, it's like controlled by the other pillars, right? If you do a lot of the things we're talking about, naturally your hormones are going to get back in alignment. So for example, if you're eating a bunch of processed hyperpalatable foods and sugar, then your blood sugar regulation hormones are going to be on a roller coaster. If you're getting really poor sleep, your cortisol is going to be dysregulated, and that's going to affect your blood sugar hormones as well. You can get tested to make sure your, you know, sex hormones are in order. Everything is working normally there. But the point is that hormones control so much, they have to be accounted for. And I kind of made these pillars to make sure people get out of the mindset of it's just about counting calories. It's just about doing cardio exercise. It's just about putting the fork down. Well, not really. Like, all of this stuff is at play, and we really have to pay attention to this.
Okay. So, all right, that one is more dependent on the other five. Inner psychology, the fourth one.
Yeah, so this is dealing with triggers and manipulators, things that are actively working against you psychologically to align those behaviors with your good intentions. So you can be doing everything great. You can have great gut health. You can have great sleep. But some for some reason, you're still binging. You still can't get away from the sugar. You're using food as a substitute for unmet needs in your life. All of that stuff has to be looked at, and people struggle with that more than they realize, I think. Doesn't sound like that's one of Osborne's struggles, but I would say the vast majority of people who have not been successful, even though they've been hammering the real food trend, the sleep, the everything that we've talked about, they still can't be successful. It's usually because of this.
Okay, so in this case, I guess this would be related to trying to first live more consciously about what we're doing, right?
Right.
And I think that there's also, I mean, I've certainly heard people talk about this and express, you know, a fair amount of frustration, lack of acceptance, a lack of consciousness about what they're doing. And that kind of gets them stuck in a rut right there.
Yeah. I mean, I basically have a laundry list of things that can act as what I call manipulators. Basically, we have this intention to do X behavior, but we are manipulated by either things inside our head or things in the environment or people that we're around that cause us to not follow through with those intentions. And sorting that out, they're different for everybody, but sorting that out is the critical piece to making sure we stay on track.
Yeah, I'm definitely wanting to get around people, or I've been wanting to get around people who inspire me, you know,
right,
to do these things. Because I can, you know, we talked about last time about my routine of movement and then sitting, right? And
yeah,
not much in between. So certainly surrounding oneself with more activity generally can pay huge dividends. So
right,
I've been working to do that. There's actually a little fitness group for people in my immediate area. So I've been trying to inject some ideas there. Osborne, I'll let you take over for the fifth one here, movement, if you have any questions about moving the body.
Probably. So my pattern right now is I am doing all my movement at the beginning of the day when I wake up. So since I'm waking up earlier, I've got a couple hours in the morning now that I have to devote to just moving because there's nothing else I can do
at
the time of the day. So I get, you know, 3 days a week I'm lifting my weights. The other days I'm just walking. But then the entire rest of the day I'm just mostly sitting.
Okay.
And I'm guessing that's probably not a good way to be.
Right. So what I would recommend is you start looking at movement as nutrition. So if you're going to dial in your food to give your body nutrition, you also have to dial in your movement to give your body nutrition. And that means not compartmentalizing movement to say, okay, I do movement in the morning, or I do movement in the evening, or I do movement on my lunch break. It's more, I do movement all day long, that I'm incorporating as much movement into my life as possible and finding creative ways to do that, because the body has to move, and it has to move a lot. So if you're doing things in the morning, but then you're sitting the rest of the day, that sitting is kind of undoing that movement that you've done that morning. So one thing I would also say is to get, just like we talked about nutritional diversity with food, we need nutritional diversity with movement as well. So you're walking, which is great. That's perfect. What I would say, how long do you walk? An hour to 2 hours?
Hour to 2 hours, yeah.
Okay. I would say maybe limit that to an hour of intentional walking and make sure you have time to build in something else on top of that. So if we can take away that extra hour and maybe invest it somewhere else, in a different type of movement, that would be great. And then if you add a lot of micro movements to your day, and we can make some suggestions on how to do that, then you'll be in a much better place. But right now you're doing walking and you're doing weightlifting, and that's the extent of it, right?
Correct.
Okay, so not a lot of diversity in what you're doing. And what is your weight training look like?
See, so yesterday I did split squats, pull downs. I don't even know what you call it. Some kind of chopping motion thing. See, front squats.
And how much weight are you using for these?
So my front squat, I'm still working on. So I'm basically just using the bar at this point. See, incline presses and two-point rows. That's what I did yesterday.
Okay. And on something that you're comfortable with like bench press, for example, how many reps would you do for a set?
In this particular cycle, those are 15 reps.
Okay. So the first thing I would suggest there would be to start dropping the rep count. So you need to have a weight that's greater to where I would say you're hitting 5 to 6 reps max. So by the time you get, you're really struggling to get number 6.
Sure. So I do, I change it up every 3 weeks.
Okay.
And so sometimes it'll be lower reps, sometimes it'll be higher reps. I mean, is that something you recommend?
It depends. I mean, it depends on your goals, but it also depends on how much time you have. Like if I'm going to go to the gym, I want to maximize my time there. And the way that I do that is by really focusing on like low reps, high weight, and getting that great workout in and then going and doing something else the next day. I don't go to the gym a lot. So when I do, I mean, if you go to the gym every day, then you can probably make changes like that. I don't. So I prioritize low reps, high weight. And what I would encourage you to do is kind of maybe test out the same approach. Like I never tell people to become gym rats and go to the gym every day. And most of my people I work with don't have gym memberships at all. We do other things to get our movement in and to create a variety of movement. But that would be the number one change I would make for you at this point is to just focus on the low rep, high weight movements.
And I think I'm in kind of the same boat as Osborne. My diversity of movement is pretty limited. Well, I think I need to introduce and talk about what my routine is. I am more of a gym rat because I have found that I really need that routine to be active. So I do lifting 3 days and I do core stuff 2 days. So that puts me in the situation where there is movement a half an hour to an hour 5 times a week, which I really need that structure. And I hope that I can add additional movement beyond that that's diverse, doing things like hacky sack or walking or rollerblading or playing racquetball or even just, you know, hitting golf balls at the driving range. Not that that's very intense, but it's, you know, it's certainly a lot more movement than actually going out and playing golf, which is also walking.
Yeah.
But that has been difficult to make that routine of adding a whole extra movement period per day. I have flirted with the standing desk thing. You said that that really isn't as beneficial as a lot of people are making it out to be. My workout routine for some time now, probably for the last 6 months, has been something called dog crap training. Are you familiar with dog crap training?
I'm not.
All right. Do you want me to tell you a little bit about it?
Sure. Let's
do
it.
So there are 2 workouts, A workout and a B workout. Now, you work out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So for each A workout and B workout, you would make 3 different versions of it. So you're getting some diversity in the exercises you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it would be Monday workout A, Wednesday workout B, Friday workout A, next Monday workout B, Wednesday workout A, next Friday workout B, and then it repeats, right? Mm-hmm. So that's 2 cycles. That's what? 1, 2. That's 3 cycles through the workout where you would do 3 different routines each time. Workout A is in this order: chest, delts, triceps, back width, back thickness. So back width would be like pull-ups, back thickness would be rows or deadlifts. Workout B is in this order: biceps, forearms, calves, hamstrings, quads last, which would be something like, you know, leg press, heavy squats. The way you do the workout is in drop sets. So you pick a weight that is heavy enough that you think in the first set, for most exercises, you can get about 8 reps. So you do that, you do as many as you can, you work to failure, you rack the weight, you take some deep breaths, maybe you wait 15, 20 seconds, you do it again. Mm-hmm. So if you got 8 the first time, maybe you get 4 the second time, you rack the weight, you wait 20 seconds, you do it again. When you do the third series in the drop set, maybe you get two reps. So you're shooting for somewhere between 11 and 15 reps total for that body part. And then you're done with that body part for that day. And you finish by doing what they call extreme stretching, where you're trying to hold to stretch the fascia of the muscle, essentially, to allow the muscles to grow. So you're holding a stretch, like for chest would be the negative position of like a bench press with dumbbells, and you try to hold it for like 60 to 90 seconds. And you look silly doing it with maybe 40-pound dumbbells, but you're kind of crying and wincing, and people ask you if you need help, but you don't because you're dog crap training. So I have done this, like I said, for many, many months. The strength gains have been far better than anything else I've ever done. You're not like doing a lot of like shaping exercise for a muscle, like people who might get into these workout routines that people like Joe Rogan always advise against, where they're doing bicep curls and then they're doing preacher curls and, you know, all these different movements targeting one muscle. You're going at one muscle hard and heavy with one exercise. So the frequency is higher. Most people who are in these kinds of split weight training routines might do the body part once a week. In most cases, you're doing a body part twice a week in this routine. And that's dog crap training. You know, it's 3 days a week. There's a more advanced version that's 4 days a week, but I didn't have good results with that. I felt like I was overdoing it with the 4 day a week version. And the only cardio that's really advised is just things that are light and low intensity, like walking.
Yeah.
I've also started to add sprints, but that's only going to be like once a week. That's what I do. That's my movement.
Okay. And so my question for you, and then my question for Osborne as well, would be, is what you're doing right now very inspiring? Do you find yourself needing to talk yourself into going to do this stuff, or are you, you know, pumped about doing it?
I'll start. Once I get there, I'm well, okay. So that was telling. I said, once I get there, I'm excited. Like, I really look forward to these workouts. In fact, when I was trying to add like cardio days, this might've been before we talked last time, I was saying, okay, maybe I need a couple days a week of just cardio, but I need to go to the gym because that's the place where this happens. That's the structure I need. I would not look for, I could talk myself out of going on those days. That'd be much more likely than talking myself out of a workout day. Like, I do look forward to going to the gym, and because you're always, you know, you're progressively trying to add more weight every time you go back to do the same workout, it's exciting almost to see what you'll do the next time or what I'll do the next time, because there's gains almost every time.
Yeah.
Like, there haven't really been significant plateaus. And every couple months you stop, you take a week off, you know, from doing this. You let, because I mean, it is pretty taxing on the joints to be moving that kind of weight at that kind of frequency. So, yeah, I would say I'm fairly motivated for parts of my movement routine. How about you, Osborne?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I get excited or pumped about it, but I also don't need to talk myself into it. It, you know, it's something I decided a long time ago that I was going to do, and so now it's just a thing I do.
Okay.
Right, like a habit, I guess.
Yeah. So there's two kind of principal things here. The first is that I'm always a fan of activities more than exercises, because I think activities naturally build in a lot of variety of movement and a variety of how the muscles are recruited for the activity that you're doing. And most people don't realize the amount of variety that's built into many different activities. You can get into a frame of mind where you're fooling yourself, almost thinking you're getting a lot of variety in a gym. Whereas if you were simply doing an activity that you love to do, you'd be getting far more variety of movement. Even if you're changing up the exercises that you're doing a lot or doing a lot of different exercises, it still probably doesn't add up to the way that your body would be recruiting muscles if you were doing an activity. And so I'll give you some examples of this. My philosophy, here's my protocol. My protocol is called DWILT, Do What You Love Today. I wrote an article on it, rebootedbody.com/DWYLT. And this was a strategy that I came up with after creating workout plans and workout schedules and, you know, a bunch of fancy stuff, and realizing that that shit doesn't inspire me and I cannot stick to it. and I will not do it. Eventually, I'll just sabotage myself. I'll run out of willpower and I'll quit doing everything altogether. I won't do any movement whatsoever just because that's the cycle that I get into. So this Dwile philosophy is you make a list, like a master list of all of the physical activities that you love to do that inspire you. So my list right now is walking. And by the way, there's going to be some things on this list that are very familiar to people. So walking, sprinting, cycling, swimming, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, MMA, slacklining, rock climbing, hiking, yoga, running, flag football, ultimate frisbee, sandbag resistance training, and tennis. So what I do is every morning I wake up, I know I have to walk. I have to walk 30 to 60 minutes that day. At some point, it doesn't have to be at a certain time of the day, but that day I have to collect 30 to 60 minutes of walking. It's just what human beings have to do. There's no getting around that. On top of that, I build in one of these Dwile activities. So what I do is I look at this master list and I say, what inspires me the most today? What do I really want to go engage in today from this list? I pick it and I go do it. All right. And that's it. So if I pick going to the gym that day, that's what I pick, because sometimes I am inspired to go to the gym. I'm not always inspired to go to the gym, but sometimes I am. If it's hiking, then I go do that. If it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I go do that. Now, using Brazilian jiu-jitsu as an example, unless you've done Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you don't really understand what I'm about to tell you, but you can be a Olympic caliber sprinter. You can go to the gym and train weights. What was it called? Dog crap training?
Dog crap. Yeah.
You can be professional dog crap trainer and go do Brazilian jiu-jitsu and you will wear your ass out, because the muscles and the style of how your body recruits muscles doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu is unlike anything else. Like, you can't get in shape for Brazilian jiu-jitsu unless you do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And that's an example of how an activity is very specific to how muscles are used and recruited. It would be the same thing with tennis. People always go out and do a new activity and they're like, wow, I didn't know those muscles existed, right? It's because you've never used them before. Activities Right. recruit these muscles in a very unique variety of ways, which is why I believe it's better to engage in activities like this, real life activities. And there's other benefits as well, being out in the sun, being with other people in a different format. You know, being in a gym by yourself is completely different from rolling on the ground with another jiu-jitsu artist, right? Like, very different experience. So we're getting a variety in that regard as well. If I'm out doing cycling, I'm getting vitamin D. I'm out in the real world, you know? So there's a lot of benefits to, I believe, prioritizing activities over exercise. And at the same time, I'm never at a loss for motivation. Like, if I'm not motivated to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I go to MMA. If I'm not motivated to do MMA, I go cycling. There's always a plan Z, right? There's so many options for me that it's easily sustainable. When I look at, and this is one thing I ask people, you know, can you do dog crap training when you're 60 or 70? Will you still be doing it? Will you still be doing it? Will you still be inspired to do it? My Dwile list can change at all times. Like, tennis is a recent one that I just added. So there is no loss of motivation ever. And I know that I can sustain this for the rest of my life. So that is the protocol that I follow. And I think a lot of people who have implemented that in their own life have found amazing results as well.
Excellent. I made a list while you were talking.
Yes.
And if you want to think about one, Osborne, while I go through mine, yoga is a new activity for me. So I don't know if I'll love it or I'll hate it. I'm extremely not flexible. So I'm looking for, and I've heard nothing but good things, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm actually going to go try yoga tomorrow at my gym at 8:30 a.m. Racquetball, which I dream about. Racquetball, yeah. Like, racquetball might only be behind sex. It is. Right. Have you ever played?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is the most fun. And I'm almost like angry with people when they tell me they don't like ping pong and racquetball. Racquetball is like 3D ping pong.
Right.
Would you play racquetball, Osborne?
No, I wouldn't.
God damn you.
All those kinds of activities, I get really just fearful about, you know, breaking things and twisting ankles and
Oh, here's some other information. Yeah, I'm 5'10", which I might have mentioned last time. Osborne is 6'4".
Okay.
Okay. And I weigh now high 170s. What's your weight?
270.
270. So we have different builds, which makes it hard for us to be activity partners.
Yeah. Well, you guys definitely need to do jiu-jitsu
together. So you go do the racquetball with someone else, but you can come back and do the sex with me.
All right, right. Exactly. There was just a quick tangent here. We went out to dinner a while ago, and Osborne was leaving work, and I was just leaving my regular work-at-home lifestyle. So I have a T-shirt and a baseball cap on, and Osborne has a three-piece suit and a fedora. And we walk into the restaurant, and I'm so embarrassed because I'm like, this looks like strangers that this man purchased me. Like, did he buy that boy? And I'm really trying to recruit Osborne for racquetball for really selfish reasons, because his gym, where I am not a member because it's very expensive, has racquetball courts, and nowhere else in town has them.
Yeah.
So, and ping pong is not a substitute, unfortunately. Hacky sack, which sounds silly when I first say it, but it is exercise if you do it by yourself. And right. you, I mean, it can, with three people who are fairly good, it could be exercise, but hacky sack, something I'd probably have to do by myself. Walking is on the list. I don't love walking, but it would be a great time for me to be learning, you know, because I could be listening to audiobooks. And rollerblading would be another one, but you really have to be conscious of, you know, the amount of effort that you're putting into it. Otherwise, you're just kind of coasting along on skates, and there's nothing cool about that.
Yeah,
that's my list. I'd always be looking for things to add to it. You?
Yeah, my problem is I really hate activity. Right. So this is why I've had to create this compartmentalization of movement. So this is the time I do my movement.
I feel the same way.
I get it over with, and then I can go do the things I want to do.
Yeah. What are the things you want to do, though?
They all involve sitting and computers.
Yeah, exactly. Or the movie theater.
There is that, yeah.
What if we
you have resistance to activities from a certain place in your mind? Like, so I can imagine that some people would fear, you know, twisting an ankle or something, or getting injured or appearing not athletic. You know, I know a lot of people are afraid to sign up for classes for certain things because they don't want to be the new guy, right? And they don't want to they don't want to feel like they're never going to get good at it or won't be good at it, and they just are more comfortable saying no, I think I'll just stick with what I've got going on.
So for certain activities, yes, definitely I would have fear of, particularly with my knees. You know, that's why I haven't gotten into skiing yet. I'd like to get a little more fit before I go embark on that. And racquetball, tennis, those things are just right out, I think.
Yeah.
Have you had knee injuries before?
Yes, I've had a couple episodes in the last 2 years where I've had to nurse through some issues.
Okay. And then are there any, if you had to, let's say that you were not concerned about your knees, you weren't concerned about injury, and you weren't concerned about athleticism, are there any activities that you think would inspire you?
Skiing is one that comes to mind.
Okay. Anything that's more accessible? Because you need a lot of, you know, stuff to do that.
I cannot think of any.
Yeah, the closest thing is sledding, and that's like no exercise. No, going back up. Yeah. So it's kind of an interval.
So I would encourage you to maybe put a little bit more thought into that, branch out. I mean, I could just see you possibly going in and doing a boxing class or something. Like, that's something that doesn't require any use of your knees or whatever. You're just punching a bag, right? Great stress relief, great workout. And like I said, this is not something you have to do 3 times a week, 4 times a week, and put on a schedule. It's just something to try. Doing a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class, because you're on the ground. You're not going to be using your knees. And you can tell people, you know, they, even in the beginner classes, they're not going to do like leg locks or anything like that. So your knees are going to be protected in a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class, but you're going to get to use your body in ways that you've never used them before, learn some self-defense simultaneously, get a great workout, and so on and so forth. And these are just things to experiment with, because a lot of times, like, motivation, I've talked before, doesn't come before you do the activity. Motivation comes from doing the activity. Like, when I was So I'm a photographer, right? And sometimes I go through periods where I have zero motivation to pick up a camera and take pictures. Well, on vacation last year, I took my camera with me and I was in one of those points where I had zero motivation whatsoever. And I picked up the camera, went out to take pictures of my daughter because my wife asked me to. First three pictures I took, the motivation instantly came back. Like I was into the groove and then picked right back up for days after that. The motivation came from doing the activity, from being engaged in it, from seeing and experiencing the activity again. And a lot of times that happens for people with the types of activities that I've just listed. So instead of sitting around like hoping to one day be inspired to do some of these activities, I would encourage you to just make it a test. Maybe once a month, make it a point to just do one of these activities, not worry about, I mean, the chances that you're going to get injured are very low. Even if you're uncoordinated or not athletic, it doesn't matter. Like nobody cares, right? So breaking through that stuff and just forcing yourself to do it once and then see what happens from there. And you never know.
Yeah, I can identify with a lot of what you're saying. And you even mentioned before, like this trouble around trying a new activity or feeling like the new guy. And I identified too, like Osborne, that I had this really negative attitude towards these types of things. I was a fat kid. You know, I was made fun of. I mean, I loved baseball. I tried to play baseball. I was made fun of. They called me Froggy because I ran funny. And like, there's memories of these things.
Yeah. You know? You create an identity out of that. Like,
yeah.
You're like, I'm not the exerciser guy. I'm not the activity guy. I'm not the fit guy. And then you start to live out that identity rather than and any really attempt to change that identity comes with a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
So it can be a very vicious cycle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, you know, health and fitness has always had too much of a focus on appearance.
Right.
I was ready. I wanted to snap. I was talking before to these guys before we started recording. I was like, how douchey is it of me to snap some beach shots to show my progress here? And we all agreed, pretty douchey, you know, but I'm excited. You know, I'm excited about that part of it. And the truth is that I do feel a lot better. Like having less stress in my life is just made a world of difference. So there are other things that I'm happy about. But yeah, I think for me, having grown up like kind of awkward and chubby, appearance really carries more weight in this whole pursuit than I think it should. I know what works to make me look good on the outside. And that's why I really think that the weightlifting stuff and doing core, like doing ab stuff, is such an anchor part of my routine that it's basically become for a long time my whole routine. And it's been a challenge to add things around that that I know are good for me. I mean, we went out and we played basketball a couple weeks ago, Carlos West and I. We weren't playing even a game. We were doing like, what's that called, 21? And then we were doing horse. The way I felt afterwards, a little disappointing. Long story short, I've had this negative attitude towards trying new, towards activity generally, really. Except once I know something produces results, something feels good, I'm comfortable in that environment, it's very hard to incorporate anything new into that. So I tried to make a list, including walking and the other things that I named, and maybe just trying to do, in addition to my anchor routine, adding one of those activities a day. Because we talked last time, you talked about walking, right? So I said, there's no way I'm going to go for a walk a half an hour a day. So I set myself up to fail, basically.
Yeah.
I could walk for half an hour twice a week, you know, and have other activities. Like I could just take the hacky sack right out into the parking lot and hack it around for, you know, 20 minutes and probably get similar results. And I'm moving in ways that, I mean, if a person was moving in those ways without a hacky sack, then someone would throw a net over them, right? So my body usually doesn't move like that at all. I stand by that. I think it's fairly good exercise if you're alone. So supplementing the anchor routine with just a different activity each day and not like making it into it has to be for this exact amount of time or I have to burn this many calories, tracking it with a Fitbit. Yeah. I'm benefiting by adding it, right? And that's maybe all it has to be until it becomes a routine and it translates to motivation.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I don't schedule anything. Scheduling has so much resistance around it and that's when the guilt comes in too, because you put something on the schedule and if it doesn't happen, it's like, oh God, again, I didn't live up to my blah, blah, blah. And that creates that downward cycle that just leads to failure.
Yeah.
But giving Osborne like some more suggestions that aren't activity related, what does your day look like, Osborne? Like, what do we have to work with here?
I have an office.
And you're there for most of the day?
Pretty much the entire day, yeah.
Do you create your own schedule or?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, I can in principle do what I want. So.
Okay. So that means potentially instead of a walk in the morning that's 2 hours long or, you know, 90 minutes long or whatever, you could do an hour in the morning and then maybe two more 20-minute walks at other points of the day.
I could, yes.
Okay. So that would be like the first suggestion that I would make is to start spreading some of that movement out. So it would be great to take a break and walk right after you eat lunch, maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And then another one kind of like, you know, 3 p.m. ish, you know, before you're getting ready to go home, take another 20-minute walk. And then maybe after you get home, I don't know what time you get home, but you can throw in a walk at night as well. Just quick ones. They can be 10 minutes. It can be 5 minutes. It can be 15 minutes. Doesn't matter. But just start to spread this out during the day. Then the other suggestion I would make is to set a Pomodoro timer. So it's basically a timer that goes off every 50 minutes or 45 minutes. You can set it for whatever you want. But the timer goes off every 50 minutes. You get up, you do some stretches, you do some mobility work, maybe roll on the foam roller, do some push-ups, do some squats, go out for a walk at that point in time. Anything you want to do during that little period. So you have 50 minutes of work, you have 10 minutes of movement, and then the timer starts again. 50 minutes of work, 10 minutes of movement, 50 minutes of work, 10 minutes, and you just do that all day long. And this is actually good for productivity too, because when you take those breaks, you get your brain disengaged, you come back to it, you're refreshed, you're ready to go again. It's kind of benefit all around.
This is it. That's the key. Because this allows you to keep a schedule without the calendar,
yes.
Right? So for me, it's providing a similar kind of certainty that I always dream about getting from writing all this shit down, right? I just redid my to-do list in like a grid,
yeah.
That I try to put times into. This is a giant failure after 6 or 7 days of trying. This doesn't work because if it goes off, like if I don't wake up and then do these things, it's screwed for the day. Basically. Yep. So that is abandoned. This idea of knowing the things I need to do every day and using this system, which we've actually talked about on the show before, for productivity, I'm implementing this immediately. Not, I'll wait till the end of the show, but
right.
That is a great idea. What do you think of that?
No, I agree.
Yeah. We have different levels of enthusiasm, but we're both in agreement.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking it through. So I'm just trying to figure out how I need to, like, I have to be like Superman and like change my clothes in order to, like, I'm not going to get out and do my stretches and squats in my suit.
Right.
That's
probably not going to go very well. So
it's not. So do other things that you can do in a suit. And you don't have to get all sweaty or anything. So it's not like you need showers to do this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the other thing you can do is, you know, make a lot of adjustments with, so people have this new standing desk obsession. Instead of the standing desk, it's not really standing versus sitting. It's just not moving. That's the problem. It's not moving. So what I do a lot of times is I will switch between a chair and standing and like a big exercise ball, sit on that instead of a chair. Therefore, like your core is engaged. You're kind of bouncing up and down a little bit as you type, whatever.
Yep.
Anytime my phone rings, I get up and I walk while I talk on the phone. I never talk on the phone sitting down because I don't need to be doing anything else except talking to this person, and I don't need my computer for that. So I get up and I go on a walk. If they call me on the landline, like in an office or something, I say, hey, I'm going to call you back on my cell phone. Boom, I'm out the door and I start walking down the street while I'm talking to this person. I come back, sit down, do more work again. Like building in movement throughout the day like this as a systematic approach and not compartmentalizing things is going to be a critical piece.
Excellent. I think that's movement. We definitely devoted the most time to that one. The last is respect that you're a whole, unique person. Let's talk about that one a little bit.
So again, like I talked about with basically this is the anti one size fits all thing. So most agendas for advice for health and fitness are one size fits all. Like this is the plan. This should work for everybody. Go do this. If you fail, it's because you didn't follow the plan, or you can't live up to it, or you don't have enough discipline, or you don't have enough willpower. And that's really not the case. And it's especially not the case with food, because we know that people have sensitivities to certain foods, and those sensitivities can cause a roadblock for fat loss and for energy levels and for getting rid of brain fog and so on and so forth. So it's embracing the fact that we are all individuals, that we should not be trying to fit ourselves into one size fits all plans, that we should learn about our individual bodies. And I tell people, don't become an expert on health and fitness. Become an expert on you. Like, you don't need to know what is good for everybody else. You just need to know what works for you. And if your friend comes and tells you that this new great thing is working for them, that doesn't mean it's going to work for you. It doesn't matter what they're doing. Focus on you and embrace those things that do work for you, and know what doesn't work for you, and get those things out of the process.
I totally agree with that. And I think that, you know, I got locked into this thing, which we've talked about before, where basically this whole culture was built around one guy's stories about what worked for him, mm-hmm. you know, with coffee and weird shit from NASA. And, you know, then that was the way that it pretty much had to be. One of the things that I talked to you about before, Kevin, and I've talked about elsewhere, is craving simplicity. Like, when I started working out, I was 21 or 22 years old, and I was reading, what's the Weider magazine, not Muscle and Fitness, the other one. There's like an even more intense one, Flex. Flex magazine and Muscle and Fitness, and, you know, reading about diet and reading about workout routines and getting lost in the complexity. And that was one of the appeals of low carb for me when it came to diet. Diet had been the thing that I had never really gotten right until, you know, I started working out in like the late 90s. In 2010, I was still eating like shit. You know, I just failed to incorporate that into the fitness equation. So when I discovered low carb, the appeal was this simplicity. Right. Yeah. So when you find somebody else and they say, don't worry, I've done all the research, just do these things. The bulletproof infographic, I still think, is a great thing to look at as far as like meal planning is concerned. None of that was developed with me in mind at all, which is a unique body and a unique psychology. Right. You know? So I think that's a really important one. And I think it also leads to a lot of frustration for people when they don't get certain results, because it becomes, what's wrong with me? If this whole culture has been built around this working.
Well, and that's what fitness trainers and the whole fitness industry has told people, is that if you fail, it's because you didn't follow our plan. Like, we gave you the instruction manual. You must have cheated. You must be, you must have eaten bad foods. You must have done this and done that. Something happened that is not our fault, right? That's what they want you to know. Like, sure. It's not our fault.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really helpful, Kevin, and I will definitely link to that article in our show notes and probably even name the show after it. One more thing that we definitely wanted to talk about today was sleep. I think both of us are having slightly different struggles with this. You got time? You got, you know, 10
yeah,
more?
Yeah, I do. Okay. Yeah, can I say one more thing about the individualization piece?
Absolutely, please do.
Especially when it comes to Osborne's situation. You know, with the gout or any type of inflammatory condition like that. So we talked about being an individual, and of course, potatoes are real food, tomatoes are real food, but these foods are in the nightshade family, and they're known to cause issues that are similar to what Osborne is experiencing. So my suggestion would be to cut out the nightshade family of plants. You can just Google nightshades. It'll give you a whole list of what nightshades are. But cutting those out and seeing if the condition improves. This is an example of, you know, tomatoes may work for me and not for Osborne. You know, potatoes may work for me and not for someone else. This is the process of finding out what your individual body wants and needs and tolerates.
So what would be a strategy for determining the truth of that for myself?
For yourself would be to cut out the nightshades and see if there's any impact on the condition that you're experiencing. Hmm. So do you still get like flare ups?
No, I don't, but I'm taking a pill every day.
You're taking a pill, right? Yeah. So again, this would be then a situation where, like, I never tell people to stop taking medication and do this and do that. I would go to a functional medicine doctor. I would say, hey, look, I have gout. This doctor has me on medication. Do you think I could benefit from approaching this from a real food standpoint? And they would lead you through the process of getting off the medication and figuring out from a food standpoint how to help that condition.
It might also just be worth taking note of changes in how you feel, right? Like, one of the things that I've heard about this nightshade family is that it can affect energy levels. It can produce mood changes. So even just approaching it from that angle first to see if there's small changes in any of that.
Right. The only issue is that the medication is clouding the effects. So the most major effect would be the gout flare-ups, and that would be sometimes you'll experience changes that you can't really put your finger on because they're smaller. But something like gout is like a major thing. Like people with arthritis, for example, that is exacerbated by nightshade consumption, the arthritis goes away 80%, 70%. Like that's a major change that they just can't ignore. And you can't talk yourself out of the fact that it wasn't the food that did that. So anytime you're taking a medication, it's another variable, and it's going to mask what's actually happening.
So sleep. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with sleep, Kevin?
My relationship with sleep is that I've made it a top priority in my life. Obviously, I think everybody should. In terms of how important it is, I would say it's a giant chunk of this puzzle, but people tend to see it as a very, very small thing. And I think that's because of our focus in, especially in the US, on maximizing productivity and getting every ounce and every minute out of our day, right? So we have people staying up very late at night. They don't want to go to bed. They're still working on projects. They have deadlines. They're watching sitcoms and all this other stuff. So their sleep is, maybe they're getting the quantity they need, but they're doing things throughout the day that's disrupting the quality, or they're just not getting the quantity at all. You know, people are thinking, oh, I can get by on 6 hours of sleep. I can get by on 7 hours of sleep. And they really don't realize how much it's messing them up. Like they say they have pretty good energy levels and, you know, they feel good. But really, when they get things dialed in, they never realize how good they could have felt this entire time.
I hope to learn that one day. I have been is in an effort to live more consciously when it comes to this whole health picture, been tracking my sleep. And I just want to share with you guys the last week.
Yeah.
Last night, 6.5 hours. The night before, 7.6 hours. The night before, 5.7 hours. The night before, 6.1 hour. Before that, 6.5. The night before that, 7.4. The night before that, 5.5. And it keeps track of your deficit, like how much sleep debt you're in.
Yeah.
So that adds up to several hours over the course of 1 week. The issue for me, you know, I've been making an effort to go to bed earlier, and that's still pretty late. It's still usually after midnight. But when I wake up, I get up. My mind starts going. I start thinking about the things I want to do. Honestly, I start thinking about coffee and I want to get out of bed. And there have been times where I've really just bundled up and fallen back asleep. Like if I wake up at an absurd time, like 6:30 after going to bed at 1:30, I will find a way to get back to sleep. But usually when I'm up, I'm up. And the bed is very comfortable. The room is now even darker than I've gone through three phases of darkening. And I think I'm at the darkest phase.
Okay.
Darkest before the dawn, you know, so hopefully this will work out.
So what are you getting when you are asleep? How's the quality?
I never wake up when I'm sleeping.
Okay. And what time about on average are you waking up?
That's a great question, and I have that information. On average for the last week, I'm averaging them in my head, it was about 8 o'clock.
And what time are you going to bed?
The average looks like it's about 1:30.
Okay. Obviously, you feel the effects of this, right?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm paying more attention to my sleep than I ever have before. So if I slept for 4 hours, 7 nights in a row, I would know what that feels like. And hopefully if I slept for like 8.5 hours for 7 nights in a row, I would know what that feels like. And I could see the difference between the median, you know, that situation in the median, which is where I am right now. Yeah, I mean, I actually did this workout last week where I'd slept so little the night before that I made a couple phone calls to ask if it would be safe to go to the gym. I slept 3.5 hours. Did one of the best workouts I can remember doing. And it's memorable because I was worried about the amount of sleep I had. All my numbers, which I keep track of in a little book, went up more than I thought they could. And I felt really energized after the workout. Is that an anomaly? Is that an anecdote? Yeah, I think it is. Obviously, 3.5 hours of sleep is not the magic number for an active person like myself.
And it's, you know, what is your body doing to, you know, what kind of hormones is your body producing in order to, in larger quantities, to keep you going?
To compensate, yeah,
and did those hormones impact the workouts that you're doing? Like, did they give you more energy than you traditionally would have had, and so on and so forth? And the answer could be yes, right? But then the next question is, what is the long-term impact of that? Can your body continue to do that? Because all these problems are cumulative. Like, they don't, it's not, I got 3.5 hours of sleep and did a workout, and then next day my body shut down. It's like, I got 3.5 hours of sleep. I did a great workout. I felt fine the next day. But somebody that continues that pattern suddenly crashes after a while because the body just can't keep up with that. So it's people always think that it's, is the bad thing going to happen to me tomorrow? No, the bad thing is going to happen to you in 10 years and 15 years from now. Like, the body is very good at adapting. The body is very strong. So it's going to put up with those conditions for a very long time. And then one day you have an issue.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've had, you know, we talked about stacking stressors and crashing out, and I've had experience with both of those things. And it's obviously multifaceted, you know, what the stressors are. They seem to, from my experience, have eventually a cumulative effect, whether it's physically or emotionally or even mentally, like how well my brain can function. So, and that was kind of the reason why I brought it up. It certainly wasn't to say, yeah, 3.5 hours, did a great workout. I mean, that sounds like something Dave Asprey would say, you know? I was concerned because I was like, how the fuck does this work?
Yeah.
The long-term cost of that. I didn't have, a vocabulary to answer that question, but you just helped with that. So that was why I asked. Osborne, your relationship with sleep.
So I'm about 6 weeks now off of caffeine. So before that, I was very much a stay up until 3 or 4 in the morning, sleep till noon kind of schedule. But over the last 6 weeks, I've turned into much more going to bed before 10, waking up at like 6, okay. Which is kind of, like I said, mess with my food schedule. So now I'm hungry in the morning. Also, now I'm tired in the middle of the day. Like right now, I feel like I could use a nap.
So you may have some cortisol like dysregulation going on. And it could be, you know, your body takes time to adjust. How long did you say that you stopped caffeine? Has it been
6 weeks?
Okay. So yeah, you're still probably in the midst of like recalibrating. But would you say that the quality is there?
I think so, for the most part. I've also got this other thing where now I'm waking up once or twice in the middle of the night to go use the restroom.
Yeah. And, when your energy crashes in the middle of the day, how long does it take to come back? Like, when do you notice that you're not really in that slump anymore?
Yeah, I think if I get up and move around a bit, it kind of re-energizes.
Okay.
Yes.
How do you feel when you get up? Like, right when you wake up, get out of bed, how are your energy levels at that point?
Depends on how I get up, right? So if I'm in a scheduling situation where I have to set the alarm, that is not pleasurable whatsoever.
Yeah.
Or if the kids wake me up or,
But
if I just wake up on my own, it's great. Right.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. That's a good sign. And I tell people, like, as much as possible, I know it's, they actually make alarm apps now that, I don't know if your app does this, Brett, but it tracks where you are in the sleep cycle. And let's say you set your alarm for 6 a.m. It may wake you up at 5:45 a.m. because that's the optimum point of the sleep cycle to wake up. So if you actually let the alarm go till 6, it wakes you up in the wrong part of the sleep cycle. Therefore, you have a really hard time getting out of bed and you feel lethargic and so on.
Yeah, it has a smart alarm, it's called, and it ranges like a half hour.
Are you using Sleep Time?
It's called Sleepbot.
Sleepbot.
Because the movement, I'm doing something in this bed. Now, but I never wake up.
Right.
Oh, no, not movement.
Or you don't remember waking up.
Yeah, it's not movement, it's noise.
But so the one I use, you set it on your mattress, and it uses the accelerometer in the phone to like measure the vibrations in your mattress.
It is allergy season. I've been really like congested. I've had a lot of issues with that. So yep. I would guess I'm probably snoring and mouth breathing more than usual, which is creating some significant spikes in noise. But other than that, I'm just going to continue to tweak things until, which is definitely probably going to mean an earlier bedtime. And, you know, I know that other parts of this will help with sleep, like incorporating more movement into the day, which yeah. I can certainly still plenty of room for improvement there, and getting to bed earlier. And I'm telling you, keeping these rooms dark, yeah. that is a huge part of it.
Do you put a mask over your eyes?
I don't. But listen, I go to bed in a position, you know, I go to bed in a position, I wake up in a completely different situation and I say, how did this happen? What am I doing? Is someone coming in and moving me in the night? And I know that if I went to bed with a mask over my eyes, I would wake up with it around my ankles. You know, so that's just me. And I've tried to do that before, especially like, you know, being in a bed with somebody else and trying to be conscious of, especially a smaller person, not wanting to roll over on them and crush them, you know. So I put thought into this for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say like I have the same personality as you. Like when I wake up, I want to get right to work.
Exactly.
I'm very, you know, motivated first thing in the morning. So what I've learned to do is getting that average wake time, because I know like I'm not going to just roll over and fall back asleep. So I have to go 8 hours from that average wake time. So that means for me going to bed earlier than I would like to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know that's the big thing that has to change. And the end of the day is never productive. But mm-hmm. what does happen, Kevin, is I'm in front of these computers and this phone. And I even installed Flux on the phone, so it was changing, you know, the light settings.
Yeah.
But I know that that's not how you wind down at the end of the day. You've got to find a way to put those, or I've got to find a way to put those devices away. So I'm working on that as well.
Yeah. And just to let people know, you know, the reason why this is so important, especially going to hormone regulation, they've done numerous studies now that less than 6 hours of sleep per night, multiple nights in a row, I think it's 2 or 3 nights in a row, basically makes you function metabolically like a type 2 diabetic and takes a while to recover. So your tolerance for carbohydrate intake, for example, is going to be severely depleted. Like insulin sensitivity is just completely deranged when you're getting that. And it's not just the hours, the quantity. If the quality is only amassing to 6 hours or less, then you're going to have that issue as well. They've done some other studies with ghrelin production and leptin production. So ghrelin is the appetite stimulant hormone and yeah. leptin is the appetite suppressant hormone. And, you know, poor sleep multiple nights in a row is going to, I think it was leptin that was 20% decreased, and then ghrelin was 30% increased. Those are just rough numbers. So basically, if you're getting poor sleep a couple nights in a row, you're going to be 30% hungrier than you normally would. So people wonder where these cravings come from. If you're getting in a cycle of poor sleep, that's exactly where they're coming from. And then your ability to feel sated, your ability to feel full is going to be decreased by about 20%. So that's not a good combination when you're talking about aligning behaviors with your good intentions as far as eating goes.
Absolutely. You got time for a couple lightning rounds?
Sure.
All right. You say you wanted to, somebody asked you, Osborne,
about nootropics.
They just wanted your basic thoughts on nootropics. I don't know any, I've heard it discussed on Rogan, but I know almost nothing about it.
There's one guy in particular says he's been using Nuvagil for 8 years.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one. It's something that I tell people to experiment with. Like, I think Alpha Brain, which is what Joe Rogan promotes, is pretty much just all, you know, natural ingredients. That's the route I would go if I was going to do something like that. And I've used Alpha Brain from time to time. I don't notice like a gigantic increase in anything or effect. I know it's different for everybody, of course. But as far as that, you know, it's like taking a very specific vitamin. It provides nutrients that can affect neurotransmitters and so on and so forth. But I would stay away definitely from anything that has ingredients that are not natural in it.
All right. Yeah. And I mean, that's the most thought I had put into it was thinking about trying Alpha Brain. You know, you seem like a naturally on the ball. I mean, not naturally, but whatever work you've done, you seem, you know, on the ball, productive, motivated, energetic. So maybe for somebody like you who doesn't experience, I mean, I don't know if you get brain fog from time to time as, you know, certain variables might change, but I certainly can experience that. And I've time,
The time I get brain fog is when my sleep's not dialed in. And that's why I've made sleep such an important part of my life, because that if I get a couple nights of poor sleep in a row, I start crashing mentally. So that's a must do on my list.
Yeah, that's my fear in experimenting with any of these kind of things. Is I really don't want to mess with what I've got going on with my sleep right now.
Sure.
Yeah. And I would also say, like, don't focus on the nootropics. Like the reason I wrote the six pillars is because that's always the starting point. You have to account for the six pillars before you do anything else. I think so many people are like, oh, I have brain fog. Let me try some alpha brain. Like, no, like you have to account for all of the other stuff first. And then alpha brain is something you can do at the very end of the journey, like to maybe give yourself that extra pep in your step. But if you're not taking care of the food and the sleep, and you're not making sure your gut is in order and all, and the stress is low, like alpha brain's not going to do anything for you. And if it does, it's just masking a problem and you're going to run into bigger problems later.
Yeah. It seems like so much of this health and fitness culture, especially for people who don't have a lot of information, it's about looking for the magic bullet.
And yeah, certainly, everybody wants the hack.
Yeah. And certainly people are promoting that, right? Like there is that thing does exist. It's juicing, it's yoga, right. You know, or whatever else. This approach that you've taken is really, really super helpful for me, because I find myself in that mindset. Like, what's the one thing I could be doing differently? And it's still, even after 2 months since we last talked of trying to be really conscious about this, it's probably still a combination of things.
Yeah. And I'm always trying to motivate people to switch that mindset to the bank account mindset. So the bank account mindset says, how do you have a healthy bank account? You have more deposits then withdrawals, and you stay out of debt, right? Yep. So every time you commit to real food, you eat a meal that's real food-based. Every time you're doing functional movement, collecting that movement nutrition throughout the day. Every time you're getting good sleep. Those are all deposits into your health bank account. Then you have the withdrawals, like a night of poor sleep is a withdrawal. Eating processed foods is a withdrawal. Eating a bowl of ice cream is probably a withdrawal. But here's the thing. A lot of people are trying to be perfectionists. You don't have to be a perfectionist. You just have to have a healthy bank account. So if I'm making all of these deposits and I want a bowl of ice cream, then I eat the bowl of ice cream. If I have $1 million in the bank account and I spend $50, I still have a healthy bank account, right?
Exactly.
So that's the philosophy they have to take. And then the staying out of debt philosophy is, look, debt is counting calories. Debt is Weight Watchers. Debt is nootropics. Debt is all of these magic bullet things that you're going to pay for later on. Like you are going to pay for severely cutting calories. People come and say, I'm down to 1200 calories a day. I still can't lose weight and I feel like shit and blah, 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 blah. Well, 1200 calories a day of food for a person that needs 2200 or 2400 or 3000, that is a debt. And over time, you are going to get the bill for that debt and it's not going to be pretty. So staying away from debt, making more deposits than withdrawals, is the only strategy that you need. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to have a healthy bank account.
Absolutely. Well said. Final question. Listener who asked was Alan, and he writes, I'm curious to know Kevin's opinion on cannabis and whether he sees a valid role for its consumption as part of a healthy, balanced lifestyle, as a foodstuff, and as a medicine.
Yes to all of those, but I would still say that it depends on the individual, right? Like there's some people who smoke marijuana and they get really anxious, like their anxiety goes through the roof and, blah, blah, blah. I would say they need to stay away from it.
Yep.
It's not working for them, right? If it's inhibiting your sleep. So I think there's some strains of cannabis, right, that will energize you and keep you up. You smoke those at the wrong time and you're not sleeping well. And you run into issues there. So I would need to say dial it in, like make sure it's working for you. But yeah, I don't see any other issues with it. And there's a lot of research that it's highly beneficial.
Yep. If it's giving you the munchers, that's another one.
Yeah. Unless, you know, some people need that. Like people who maybe have been low carb for a little too long and have completely destroyed their metabolism and their appetite, a little marijuana and a little extra munching would probably be beneficial for them. That's why I said there's no one size fits all answer. So it depends on the individual.
There you go, kids.
Kevin says use drugs.
And, you know, I've certainly seen people using it in ways that were less than optimal.
And the other thing I would add is to not use, like, if marijuana is a coping mechanism in your life, that's like, to me, that's not a legitimate use of it. So it sounds like if you're a user the way Joe Rogan is a marijuana user, he seems like he's using marijuana for very productive reasons, right? There's some people who come home from work, they have a shitty day, they hate their life, so they get high all the time, and they have a kid that they're not taking care of. Like, that's not a good, healthy use of marijuana.
Right, and I think that, unfortunately, one of the reasons why it's hard to have that conversation about it is that's how almost everybody who's using it uses it. Right. For those reasons, because, you know, there is so much unaddressed, undealt with, unexamined trauma. And I mean, you know, I certainly don't think that any kind of marijuana usage is in any kind of volume is as bad as smoking cigarettes or heavy drinking or anything like that. But I do think that for most people who use it, it is some kind of coping mechanism. And that's up to the individual to look at. But if it is dialed in, it can benefit you.
Yeah. And I would also caution to never use it around kids that you, like if you're a parent, your kids need you. Like they don't need an altered version of you.
So exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I put that caution there as well.
So that is everything. Osborne, best show ever.
I do believe.
What a fantastic and educational time this was. Kevin, thank you so much again for adding so much value to this show and to my life. I can't be more happy with the results that I got over a relatively small period of time and more optimistic about what I can do in another 2 months.
Excellent. Glad to do it.
Can you tell the folks your website one more time?
Yeah, rebootedbody.com.
And what would you like people to do if they go there?
Definitely get on the email list just because I publish every Sunday. I send out an email that's exclusive. It's content that I don't publish anywhere else. So I would definitely get on that. And then if you're serious about implementing these things, getting a body and life you love, you want help, you want one-on-one coaching for this, and you want a proven system, we have a couple programs over there as well, Total Body Reboot. And if you just want to address the sugar cravings issue, we have Shut Down Your Sugar Cravings. And both of those are available for you.
Excellent. Thanks again, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
New subscriber geography trivia. You just say a person's name and they tell a fact about where they live.
Chinese fortune cookies. This was going to blow your f***ing mind. So if you're new, this is something that I like to do kind of irregularly, and I'm trying to make a habit of incorporating it into more shows in the future. It's called New Subscriber Geography Trivia. So it's really, at this point, Old Subscriber Geography Trivia, because I'm going all the way back to October of last year to, well, I mean, the theme song really says it all. It's like perfectly written to describe what happens next. When people sign up, I like to thank them by using their first name and their last initial, then sharing some interesting things about the place PayPal tells me they live. So here we go, with Matt R., who is from State College, Pennsylvania. Well, what can I tell you about State College, Pennsylvania? Interesting name, that's because that's where Pennsylvania State University is. Penn State. You've heard of Penn State. Did you know this? Just 11 miles away is the State Correctional Institution of Rockview, the State Pen. Penn State, State Pen. Life is funny that way sometimes. If you're ever there, also plan a trip to Beaver Stadium, the second largest stadium in the Western Hemisphere. They need it for all that football they do. That is still a thing. So thanks again to Matt. And up next, Thomas M. in San Francisco, California. Chinese fortune cookies. This was going to blow your fucking mind. Chinese fortune cookies were invented in San Francisco by, get this, a Japanese man. In 1901, San Francisco outlawed burials within the city limits. Most of the cemeteries are in nearby Colma, California, where the dead outnumber the living by over 1,000 to 1. Now, how about this one? One more. The U.S. Navy originally had a plan to paint the Golden Gate Bridge black with yellow stripes. Isn't that ironic? And that orange color that the bridge is today was merely supposed to be a sealant before the black and yellow paint was applied. Anthony M. from Leeds in the United Kingdom That's England. Now, many of you are probably going to say, Brett, what are you really going to be able to tell us about Leeds, a place you've certainly never been, that we couldn't learn for ourselves on Wikipedia? That sounds like a challenge, so here I go. Do you know one of Leeds' residents, named Harry Corbett, was the inventor of the popular children's puppets Sooty and Sweep? I'm guessing that has some kind of a chimney theme, but I don't know all the details. Now, Harry has an uncle named Harry Ramsden, who is a fish and chip tycoon over there. And one time, Harry, the puppet inventor, was in the restaurant of Harry, the uncle fish and chip tycoon, playing the piano, and he suddenly fainted. Boom. Trivia.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us at schoolsucksproject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.